You're listening to Building the Game with Rob and Jason.
It's Building the Game with Jason and Rob. For tabletop game design, you really can't go wrong. Building the game, yeah, building the game.
Hello and welcome to Building the Game, a documentary podcast. Today is Monday, January 19th, 2015. You're listening to episode 138. My name is Rob, sitting across the table as happens. We've done this once or twice before. Mr. Jason Slingerland, howdy.
Once or twice.
Yeah, a couple of times. It's cold out there, man, isn't it?
It is cold
outside. It's cold. Michigan weather, eh? Yeah.
Michigan sucks.
Yeah, I think today it was like, when I went to work this morning, the thermometer on the car said 1 degree. Yesterday when I went to work, it was, I think, 16 degrees. It got up to like almost 30 during the day.
Yeah.
I think this coming weekend it's supposed to be 36 one day this weekend. I don't know, man. Michigan weather. Winters in Michigan are ridiculous. Why do we live here?
I think we're just too lazy to move.
I think that's what it is. Like, I already have a job and a house.
Yeah.
And I don't want to think about making any more effort.
Right. You talked about selling your house, though, so maybe you can move.
Yeah.
You need to find a new job, though.
Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah.
That's tough.
Yeah. I think we're going to take a trip to San Francisco this spring sometime, I think in May. So maybe we'll just won't come back.
You never know.
Yeah, we can move to the most expensive city in the country. That'd be
good,
right.
Good plan.
Yeah, sure. What the heck?
Just move in with Grant Rodiak. I'm sure he'll be okay with that.
Yeah, I don't think he'd be okay with that.
He's got two houses, I think.
Does he?
A condo and then a place in Napa or something he always talks about, so.
Okay. I don't know.
Hold this corgi hostage.
I don't think he'd appreciate that. I'm not going to do that.
Peaches might be an attack dog, dude. I don't know.
Yeah, I think he's been actually helping me with some advice on where to get a hotel, what neighborhoods are good and what neighborhoods are bad.
I can more tell you what neighborhoods to avoid.
Yeah, right. So thanks, Grant. I'm sure you're not listening, but thanks anyway. Yeah. What's new?
Not a whole lot.
Yeah?
No, just the Unpub Crunch, man. The
Unpub Crunch, you know? Yeah, yeah. What you been playing?
Mostly working on prototype stuff. Doing some solo play testing of Andy and Ice Game you've been working on. So, it's been rough. I started playing this game on my phone called Tap Titans. I know we don't talk enough about iPhone games. So
no, not nearly enough. Yeah.
Called Tap Titans. And basically the whole point of the game is every time you tap the screen, you do damage.
Great.
And you're trying to attack monsters. And it sounds really simple, but like you upgrade things, and the way you upgrade them drastically impacts how the game works. And you have to do this thing where you like reset back to the beginning of the game, but you get bonuses based on how far you got. And most people on the forums I'm seeing are like, I made it to level 120 and I felt really good. Yeah. I'm almost on level 300 and I haven't had to refresh yet. So,
okay.
So I feel like I'm doing a decent job with strategy, but I'm getting close now. I'm like, oh gosh, the game's starting to become like a slog trying to get through it. So you refresh and it puts you back to the beginning, but gives you all these like artifacts that give you a bunch of like bonuses.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can earn more as you go through the game, which is a lot easier now because you're going through the game a second time. So, so basically, you have the experience of going through once and knowing what's good, and then they're giving you these artifacts a lot sooner. You have to get to level 80 to start getting them, and now I can get them at level 10. So, you know, so I get a lot of bonuses and stuff, and we'll see. I'm going to try and go back once and play it again and see if it's still good. And if it's not, I'll just set it on fire or delete it. So,
yeah, if you want to set your phone on fire, I'd be happy to film that.
Yeah, I'm not going to actually set my phone on fire, jerk. Right.
Yeah, well, that's good. Yay, iPhone games. I've been playing Desert Golfing, which is...
Is exactly what it sounds like?
Yeah, it's even simpler than it sounds like. It's just, you whack a little white ball across a brown two-dimensional landscape to try and get it in the hole. And it's great and simple and totally easy to do.
Right.
And something about it is just kind of soothing.
Right.
Yeah, so
all right.
That's good. We went out with some friends the other night, and we went to that new board game bar here in town.
Yeah.
Yeah, One Well Brewing. It's a cool little place. It's a microbrew. And yeah, it's a new place. I think they're still kind of getting their feet under them a little bit. You know, it's cozy. The decor is, you know, clearly not professionally done, you know?
Nice.
But they've got a pool table and they've got some dart boards and they've got, I think they have 3 arcade machines and 2 pinball tables, and that's cool. And a shelf of board games. They had a decent selection, not a lot of really, well, so, okay, so we were there on a Saturday night, and we brought with us Dominion, and we brought Finish It.
Okay.
Okay, and we actually ended up not having time to play Dominion before the bar closed, so we played a game of Finish It, and that that was super fun. There were 4 of us.
4 of us? Okay.
Yeah, it was me and Christine and Laura, who I designed the game with, and her husband, Mike, and we had a really good time. We didn't have time to play Dominion. After the bar closed, though, we actually went back to their house and played Dominion.
Nice.
So that was good. But we were sitting there, and I was actually at our local game shop. I was there earlier that day, and talking to one of the guys who works there. And I guess the guys who work at the game shop know the owners of the of the brewery, of the pub, whatever they want to call it, the microbrew. And they said that one of the problems that they're having, because they really, really want to promote board games and encourage people to hang out and play, you know? But one of the problems they're having is that people come in just for the beer, and they say, oh, board games, hey, that's funny, ha, ha, ha. And then they sit down, and they play Risk, or they play Life, or they play Sorry.
Why do they have those games available?
Well, you know, that was my question. You know, like, if you don't want people to play these games, if you want to encourage them to play gamer games, then don't even have those games available. But then again, if you try and advertise yourself as a board game bar and you don't have games that the general public are familiar with, then they're not going to play any games at all.
Right, I get you.
Yeah, so you don't want the place to feel elitist, you know?
Right.
But then people aren't playing those games because they're fun. They're playing those games because they think it's funny to play those games that they played when they were little kids again.
Right.
You know, now that they're, oh, I can drink beer and I can still play Sorry.
The game is still stupid.
Yeah. So the challenge that they're having is they're looking for new games to bring in that are, you know, easy gateway games.
Right.
But that also don't have a ton of pieces and components that are easily lost, you know?
Right.
So compact experiences that are good gateway games for people. You know, like they had Catan, of course, and they had Carcassonne,
Catan is a terrible one for losing pieces.
Yeah, right. So, but they had Carcassonne, which is tiles and meeples, you know, and that's pretty okay. I think that's reasonable. And there was a bunch of stuff. They had like Power Grid there. I've never played that, but I'm told Power Grid is great.
Yeah, it's supposed to be good.
A decent variety. But we'd only been there one time, but I'm told that every other time that Laura and Mike were there with us, they said that every other time they'd been there, it was just people playing Cards Against Humanity, and that was all anybody was playing. Yeah. And this is the first time they went there that no one was actually playing Cards Against Humanity.
Boo.
You know, so I think they got a real challenge. They need more events to encourage people to play different games. They also need more people to teach these games. Because, of course, sitting down reading the instructions is always the worst part about learning a new game.
Right.
So that was it was cool. It was a good place. We'll definitely go back. The beer was fine. I mean, it was okay. I've had worse beer in town. There's that the Boatyard is north town, north side. Well, their beer is terrible.
It's on the north side.
Yeah, well, but that, no, I mean, that doesn't automatically mean it's in the industrial area. It's not in the not in the low-income area. But their beer is just terrible, man. Whew, if anybody who makes that beer is listening to the show, I'm sorry, but your beer is not good. I'm sorry.
If you're listening to the show, maybe you should work at the other bar where they have board games.
Yeah. Yeah, so their beer is pretty good. They also serve wine there, which is nice because from a Michigan winery. So, you know, keep it in the state. But for anybody who is not interested in beer, because I have a few friends who are not beer drinkers, but would love to drink local wines.
Right.
And so that's cool. That's very cool, yeah.
So, yeah, we should talk to those guys there and explain to them that we're awesome about board games and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And they don't have any TVs. There's no TVs in that bar. They have a projector and they have a pull-down screen. And the night we were there, they were playing for some sport playoff of some kind. I don't know. Okay. I think it was football, maybe hockey. That's the wrong time of year for hockey. It's probably football.
Well, should they have like an episode of Tabletop playing?
They could, theoretically. So but it's cool that there's not just TVs on all the time.
Right.
You know, that's nice. I like that a
lot. You notice the game store now has a TV in there and they play like episodes of Tabletop?
Yeah, that's cool. That's super cool. Yeah, yeah.
Will Wheaton, man. I know he doesn't do it for you, but there was an episode of Tabletop and he was teaching kids how to play Kids Catan or whatever.
Yeah.
I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, that's cool.
So
I don't think he's a bad dude. You know,
I think he's... every time I've seen that guy, and I've seen him a few times at different places, like at Gen Con even this year, I saw him, and you know, he always talks about online how like he always makes time for kids. Like, he's not a big fan of being bothered, but he always makes time for kids. And
that's cool.
I was walking around Gen Con, and I passed him. He was walking around with his wife, and I didn't bother him because, you know, I mean, like, because he doesn't like to be bothered, and I'm sure his poor wife likes it even less.
Yeah, right.
It sounds like she's a very nice lady from everything I've heard, but anyways, so I passed him, and you know, people like eyeballing him, like they want to say hi, you know.
Yeah.
But the this little kid walks up, like with his mom, and the little kid had a costume on, and he like says something, and Will Wheaton like gets down on his knees in front of the kid, and like talks to the kid, and tells him he's got a cool costume on, and then like stands back up and says goodbye, and I'm like, that's a class act.
That's cool. You know,
that's cool. Like,
So,
yeah, you should be nice to kids who think you're cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
They're kids.
Absolutely.
So,
yeah. So, local board game bar, good first experience. I'll definitely go back. We should try and talk with those guys.
Yeah,
get to know them a little bit.
Get some of our games in there.
Yeah, not that anybody will play them, but...
Well, we could teach people how to play
them. We could teach people that, right. I mean, bottom line, just be good to know more gamers in the area, so...
Right.
Yeah. So that's what's been happening for moi.
Sweet. All right, let's talk about a topic. So we asked some people for ideas for stuff, and we had a couple topic ideas, actually, that we were going to talk about. But then we got a pitch challenge, and we love doing those. So so we thought we would do that to start out with.
From our good buddy Lynn Wexford, he tweeted, he said, okay, 1D20 standard, 4D6 red, blue, yellow, green with icons, 10 to 20 cards, 2 winks, black and white. Build the game. Go.
It's a little harder than normal because there's so many components to try and remember.
Yeah.
But I think the core of the game is probably going to be in those dice, right? The custom dice. Otherwise, why do you have custom dice, right?
Well, we also got 10 to 20 cards.
Yeah, but I mean, 10 to 20 cards. I mean, if you're going to go through the trouble of having custom dice in your game, right?
Well, they need to be a focal point. I think that's a good point.
So,
yeah. So 4D6 in 4 colors, custom dice. That's the kind of the core feature there.
Right.
All right.
So,
what if the cards, maybe the cards are not played played to play the game. Maybe the cards are the board, for example.
Okay.
We lay the cards out either in a row or in a grid.
Okay. The tiddlywinks, an easy thing for those is one is me, one is you.
Black and white. Yeah. Sure. You're play one, player two. Okay, yeah. So two-player game. So a two-player game. And the board is made up of a grid of cards. Okay.
What if... I know he assigned colors to everything, but let's assume for a second he didn't.
Okay.
What if the colors aren't necessarily black and white? It's like... Or maybe it is black and white. And then the dice are varying shades within there. In fact, what if the tiddlywinks instead are some color in the middle? Colors in the... Like, so basically you've got a white die, your tiddlywink, a yellow die, and then a orange die, and then a red tiddlywink, and then a purple die. So basically you've got the color spectrum going up. Does that make sense?
Okay.
So so my tiddlywink is the whatever color. So basically what I'm saying is each of us are framed by dice, right?
So we each have a die on either side.
Okay, no, that's wrong. Okay, let's start with this. Black and white tiddlywinks, okay? So varying colors in between is what I'm thinking of. So, like, there's a die, like... I'm not saying it in a way that makes sense to you.
Not any at all.
So, what I was thinking was, like, color spectrum, right?
Uh-huh.
Like, if I'm the black one, then maybe there's a gray die, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so the gray die is, like, my primary... Like, that one I always have access to roll. Right.
Okay.
Then the next die down the line, we'll call that brown or dark blue. I have access to that, but it's harder for me to use. And then the next one is orange, really hard for me to get to. The next one is yellow, almost impossible for me to use. And then there's the white one, which is you, right? And yours is the exact opposite.
Okay, to what end?
I don't know, but...
Okay.
That kind of seemed cool to me, the idea that, like, you have...
Well, I was thinking that the four colors of the dice and the different icons on the dice could correspond with colors and icons that are on the cards on the table.
Yeah, okay.
And then... Let's see. So you're moving your winks around. That's your pawn. So let's say it's a 4x4 grid. Okay, 16 cards.
Okay.
All right. And we start in opposite corners. Okay. And you can roll a die, the color die that corresponds with a card, the color of a card that is adjacent to the card you're on orthogonally.
Okay.
Okay.
That makes sense.
So not the color that your thing is on,
right?
Your wink is on, but on one of the cards orthogonally. Okay. And those cards have a standard color and then have an icon on them.
Right.
All right. And so then you roll those dice, mm-hmm. and then you hope that you get an icon that on that color that is on that same card.
Okay.
Okay. And then you can move your wink to that card. And then it's the other guy's turn. And your goal is to get to the opposite corner.
Okay.
Okay. So that's purely random so far.
It's a roll and move game. Well, yeah. You get to choose which one you roll. Now, what would...
Well, you would roll all of them and then choose which way to go based on the die roll.
Oh, okay. So, yeah. So the bad thing about that is it's kind of like roll and move.
It's basically roll and move.
But now the dice can be custom though, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what if instead, in addition to having a symbol there, like the die color, right?
Mm-hmm.
It also had like a number. And that was the number of times you could re-roll that die. Or no, even better, because this is simpler. The number of times you could adjust that die. Like, I can tip it one way, right?
Hmm.
Well, no, because on a D6, the only thing that's locked is the thing on the exact opposite side.
Right.
That worked better for the D20. This is harder starting with this many components.
Yeah, that's tough.
We're not used to starting with this many components. Usually it's a little more freeform.
Right.
Which isn't a bad thing. It makes you think in a different way, you know?
Yeah. Maybe you can choose to flip a card instead. Is there an option there? Is there something useful there?
Well, what if the cards were all started face down?
Okay.
And on the back of the cards, there were pictures of two dice, right?
Okay.
Or two symbols that could be on... No, let's say two dice to make it simple. So there's the blue and the orange die are on the one. So when you flip it over, one of those two dice will be on that card.
Okay.
Which will allow you to use that die's ability. So starting with what you had, I'm in a spot, and orthogonally, I've got four cards around me that I can use.
Mm-hmm.
Those are all face down. I have to determine which one I want to flip based on the colors that the choices that I'm being given. And now I think that, so when I flip it over, boom, okay, I wanted blue, but it was orange. I got to use the orange one now. I think moving is something you could just do on your turn. You could just choose to move to a card that's been flipped over. But I think you could also, when you flip a card over, choose to roll the die that was reflected on that card, the actual one that is there. So it's blue or orange, flip it over, it's orange, right?
Okay.
So I think each of those colored dice have to have a different thing they let you do. So what if we're moles crawling under the ground?
All right. Okay.
So I mean it's kinda I wanted to say, what if we're like miners, but I feel like that's a little overdone, you know, like for like digging through the ground.
Yeah, no, I'm cool with moles.
So
yeah.
We're moles. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure how to correlate the things that are giving us these power-ups, basically, like that we can use. What if it's as simple as... I mean, what if it's as simple as when I see the... Okay, what if you don't roll the dice? Screw it. Let's not roll dice.
All right.
Rolling dice is stupid. I'm kidding. Rolling dice is actually okay. But, okay. What if when I flip it over... So it's I see that it's there's two things, right? It's two set values. On this card, it's orange and blue. The orange is something, and the blue is something else, right? Mm-hmm. One is good, one is not so great. I flip it over, so I know my choices. I flip it over, I get it. If that happens, I get the orange die, right? Like, say it's orange die, and the orange die is a value of 3. Let's say the dice aren't custom for now, just so I can kind of show you some numbers.
All right.
So I flip it over, and it's a 3 orange. Nobody controls the orange die. That means I can take the orange die and put it in front of me with the 3 facing up, right? So kind of these are the treasures that the moles are finding, right? Now, well, you do the same, right? But now when you come to a thing that says this is either going to be an orange 4 or a blue 1,
mm-hmm.
Now you could take the risk, right, and flip it. If it's a blue 1, you get to keep it. But if it's an but it kind of sucks, right, because it's a 1. Mm-hmm. But if it was the 4 orange, you would claim the orange because it was higher than the orange I had in play, right? Now, eventually, if you get a 6, you're locked, and they can't be stolen. And when that happens, eventually, someone wins. Don't know how the D20 works.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not necessarily a good idea at all, but yeah.
Okay, what if the icons on the cards, what if we have 6 different things that the moles are trying to dig up?
Okay.
Okay. Grubs, roots, rocks, pebbles, let's say.
Soil, just could be soil. Could sure. Be one of them.
Okay. So you...
Ooh, one of them could be a trap.
Trap.
Which would be bad.
Yeah.
It's a tough one.
Yeah.
Thanks, Len. Thanks a lot.
Mm.
Thanks, Rob, for being like, let's do a pitch challenge. Sometimes pitch challenges are hard.
Well, so where I was going with that is that at the start of the game, you set all those dice aside. You don't even do anything with them at the start of the game. You lay out all the cards face down, all right? And you have your little pawn, and you move around, and somehow you use the D20 to determine how you move.
Okay.
Just go with that for now.
Sure.
Somehow that D20 affects that. All right. So you're flipping cards and you're collecting them. Okay. You're collecting cards as you reveal them.
Okay.
Okay. In fact, you know what? Maybe those cards are already face up. You know, and those cards are those things, the same faces that are on the dice, of various colors. Okay.
Okay.
And each thing might have two colors and 2 different things on it. Okay. I don't know. Let's say that. And so we already started the game by picking some stuff up. All right. Then you get, once each player has, say, 4 cards picked up, because you're just picking whatever you want,
mm-hmm.
you know, then you roll the dice, all 4 of those dice, and those tell you what the 4 high value items are.
Okay.
Okay. Then, and so then you get another round or 2 rounds to get a couple of more cards to try and target those things. Then. Yeah, okay. So you get 2 rounds to pick up cards. So each player gets 2 cards. You roll the 4 dice, that tells you what the hot commodities are in the mole market. Okay.
Okay.
All right. And then you get 2 more rounds to try and get those things.
Okay.
All right. Then you can sell your commodities whatever you got, or you can, if you, those are the things that are for, that somebody wants to buy. Mm-hmm. All right. So then you can sell your commodities for points. Okay. We're tracking points another way, pen and paper.
Sure.
Okay. And then you re-roll those four dice, and that tells you what the new hot commodities are.
Okay.
And then you can spend your cash to move your guy around to try and dig up other things. Is this getting somewhere?
Yeah.
Maybe?
I like it. Keep going. I'm not going to change it because you've got the best thing so far. So okay. We should go with that.
So it's the mole market. It's the mole market. That's what the game's called.
Or holy moly.
Because it has to rhyme.
Yes.
No.
Okay, let's go with that, though.
That's all right.
Good. Pitch challenge one. Not a slam dunk, but at least a lob shot that bounced off the backboard and then maybe went in.
It's the beginning of something.
Right.
It's the beginning of a thing. Thanks, Len.
Thanks, Len, for making that complicated. All right, now you're going to pitch a game.
I got to pitch a game, yeah. All right, so... That's good. Thank you for that. Okay, so I listen to podcasts all week, right? Not all day at work, but as time allows, when I'm at work.
Pretty much you do.
I try to.
Every time I come to your desk, you have your headphones.
I'm not always successful, but...
Turn off the giant bomb cast.
Yeah, and talk to Jason. Hey, it's a good podcast. I like those guys. Anyway, I was listening to Lou Reed's The Internet. Okay, one of my favorite podcasts, Lou Reed's The Internet. It's a guy, Lou, I think it's Lou Fernandez, and he will go to various forums on different websites, and he will just read forum threads. And it's funny because he generally goes for the most messed up, vulgar forums he can possibly find. And it's really, really, really inappropriate stuff. Sometimes it's just crackpot craziness. Sometimes it's just really offensive, horrible things.
Right.
There are episodes that I have to turn off halfway through because I just don't want to hear that. I won't get any details about those episodes. But
man, if it makes you turn it off,
yeah.
Oh my gosh.
There have been a few where I'm like, nope, don't need to know what those people think about that subject. No thanks. Some of the most fun ones though is when he goes to like paranormal forums. And reads all kinds of ridiculous crackpot theories. Okay, who am I to say they're ridiculous? I'm a guy who's saying they're ridiculous. Maybe they're totally true. Just because I don't agree doesn't mean they're wrong. But they're probably wrong because they're crazy. Okay.
Just saying, it's probably aliens.
Yeah, right. On a recent episode of that, he was reading some paranormal stuff, and somebody in a forum thread mentioned the Hat Man, how they had seen the Hat Man. They wanted to know more about the Hat Man. And I was like, I kind of feel like I've heard of the Hat Man. And they went on in that forum thread to postulate all kinds of theories about who and what the Hat Man is and how he relates to the Shadow People.
Right.
Do you know much about the Shadow People?
I embarrassingly have read a lot about...
Have you?
I mean, you know, I'm a Wikipedia junkie.
You are, yeah.
And
the Wikipedia entry on the Shadow People is woefully inadequate.
Then maybe that's not where I read that one, but like... I've listened to a lot of the...
Jim Harold's
Campfire.
Yeah, Paranormal Podcast and Campfire, yeah.
I don't really care for the Paranormal Podcast, but...
But the Campfire is amazing.
The Campfire is such a great show. So basically, people call in and tell their ghost stories of things that supposedly happened to them. And some of these people certainly believe the story they're telling. You can tell.
Absolutely.
You can tell some of the people are making it up on the spot.
I was on the Campfire once.
Right, you were.
Actually, twice. Twice I was on the Campfire.
Did you make up the thing?
No, they're totally true.
Did you feel legit about it?
I may have embellished a bit, but they were both totally true.
Did you get Jim Harold to say, oh my.
Yeah.
You did?
Yeah, of course.
Nice.
Of course.
That's the best.
Yeah.
That's the best.
Yeah. Yeah, so, all right, so listeners, look for Jim Harold's Campfire. It's a great podcast.
So, but anyways, because of that, a lot of people talk about Shadow People and the Hat Man.
Yeah.
And so I've heard a ton about that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that I find interesting because, like, it's creepy and it's
modern
weird.
Folklore, right?
And some of these people, like, are really, really afraid of this stuff.
Sure.
So it's interesting. I mean, if I believe that I saw what they believe they saw, I would probably be very afraid to.
Sure. So. Yes. And very passionate about that belief and about that fear.
Absolutely. Yeah,
sure. So, if you don't know what we're talking about, do yourself a favor, listen to Jim Harold's Campfire, do some Googling of the Hat Man and the Shadow People. So, I like that. I like that idea of some kind of creepy alternate being. or strange, you know, strange unknown evil force entity thing. And you remember a long time ago that I pitched a Slenderman game, right?
Slenderman game.
And I liked the idea, but I ditched it, and I talked in some detail about it at the time, because Slenderman, contrary to popular belief, is not a, you know, a free thing. I mean,
and it's not even a real legend. It's a fake thing someone made up.
It's something somebody made up on the internet, and right. The guy who made that up owns that. He owns that. He owns that character. That character is not free to use by anyone anytime.
Do you want to, though, Google best Slenderman photoshops? And there are some really creepy, believable photoshops that look like old pictures with a Slenderman in the background.
Yeah.
Like, they are creeptastic. Like, if you didn't know better, you'd be like, whoa.
Yeah. But so I ditched that idea because I didn't, because I, it just felt, I'm not going to step on any toes and deal with any copyright issues. I'm just not going to do that. But I still like the idea that one of the kind of features of that game is that it had a, like a changeover mechanic where at some point you could be captured by the Slender Man and then you were working against the other players. And I always liked that a lot. And I tried to kind of retheme it or come up with my own evil, non-copyrighted creature, but it never really felt genuine to me. And so I've been sitting on that for a long time, but now the Hat Man came up. I thought, okay, now I can just repitch my Slenderman game as the Hat Man. Hey! But that also felt not quite very honest, so I started thinking about what could I do with a Hat Man game. So in my fiction, right? In my fiction, the Hat Man is this strange evil being, this dark entity that has existed in the world since the beginning of time, you know, since the beginning of humanity. And different cultures see this evil entity in different ways and manifest him in different forms.
Right.
And in our modern internet age, he manifests as a dark silhouette, a shadowy silhouette of a man wearing a hat. And he's tied to the shadow people because he survives. And again, this is my fiction of this.
Right.
I don't know how much this ties in with anything that anyone else has, imagined, but in my concept of this is that this entity has survived over all this time by consuming the souls of innocents and, well, maybe not even innocents, be they good, be they bad, people who are for some reason susceptible to his influence. And when he consumes someone's soul, that person becomes a shadow person. And then, the shadow people have because they've been consumed by the Hat Man, they're ever present around him. And so when you see a shadow person, it means that the Hat Man is near. And the more shadow people you see, the closer and closer the Hat Man is getting to you.
That makes sense, yeah.
You know, right. They almost, you know, they are trying to warn you to escape him, but they also herald his arrival. Is this kind of strange idea, right?
Right.
So that's kind of the inspiration of this character for me. Where the game actually ended up being is quite a bit different from that. So that's the inspiration. So the idea of this game is that the players are people who have just fallen under the influence of the Hat Man. And so they are beginning their soul is beginning to be consumed by the Hat Man and they are trying to escape his grasp.
Good plan.
Yeah. Before he consumes their soul completely. Okay. The game board is basically a circle of circles, a circle of, call them wells, all right?
A circle of circles? Gotcha. Yeah,
right. So there are 10 circles, call them 10 wells, 10 locations, 10 right. Whatever you want to call them. So I'm calling them wells because I like Indiana Jones and Well of Souls, you know, from Raiders of the Lost Ark. Right. So I'm calling them wells. And there are 10 wells in a circle on the game board, okay? Mm-hmm. Each player, this is up to two to four players, actually probably would work best with four. Each player starts the game with 10 cubes of their color. Okay. And at the start of the game, they put one color in each of these 10 wells.
Okay.
So each of the 10 wells has four different color cubes in it. All right. You have, and then there's one big black cube that represents the Hat Man.
Okay.
Okay. That begins that you just set that in the center board to start with. So then you start playing and you have a deck of cards and the cards are essentially just numbered cards. Okay. On your turn, you play a card, and that card identifies how many of your cubes you can move on your turn.
Okay.
Okay. And the cards, I don't know if they're numbered 1 to 4, 1 to 6, 1 to 8. I certainly don't want to let the players move every single one of their cubes on a given turn. Right now, I'm thinking 1 to 6 at the most.
Okay.
And there would be many more 2s and 3s than anything else.
Right.
Okay. So you play this card, and that allows you to move that number of your cubes.
And you would have a hand of cards to choose from?
You would have a hand of cards. Okay. Right. But I'm thinking not a big hand, like 3.
Right. Okay. But you have options.
So you have some options. Yep. Right. Yeah. Not a lot, but a few. So that's not saying how many spaces you can move, but it's how many of your cubes you can move. Now, how far you can move your cube depends on how many cubes are in that well.
Oh, nice.
Okay. So at the start of the round, every well has 4 cubes in it. That means when I take my cube out of there, if I move it out of that well, I can move it up to 4 spaces. And
right.
When players move their cubes, they always move them clockwise around the table.
It's like the Maelstrom board?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, because it doesn't spiral inward.
Okay.
Okay. So you can only ever move them clockwise around the board. All right. Then I just move that cube out of there. That means if one of the other players wants to move one of his cubes out of there, there's only 3 left in that, so you can only move 3 spaces clockwise.
Right.
Now 2, and then 1. All right. And so you go around the table until one of the wells is empty.
Okay.
Okay. And as soon as one of the wells is empty, the Hat Man appears.
Okay.
And so you move the Hat Man cube out of the center of the board and drop it in that well. Now, on everyone's turn, the Hat Man moves 1 space forward counterclockwise.
Oh, so he should be intersecting with you is the idea.
Right. And whenever he moves into a well that has cubes in it, he immediately consumes all the cubes in that well.
Okay.
Okay.
Bummer.
Yeah. And so then you want to basically be the last man standing. Okay, you want him to consume all the other cubes. As soon as he consumes another player's all 10 of another player's cubes, then they're out of the game, and you continue around until there's only 1 guy left. Okay, that was the basic idea. That's too simple. Also, it might take way too long for the Hat Man to suddenly appear.
Right.
Okay. So
because players can be super sneaky about it and purposely.
Yeah.
You know.
Right. The way those pieces move is inspired a little bit by Pompeii, by how pieces move in Pompeii.
Right.
When you're trying to get your people out of the city as the lava is filling up, that's how many spaces you can move your guys is based on how many people are in the building before you leave it or when you exit it.
Right.
Okay. An alternative is to do this in a sort of how Mancala is structured.
Okay.
Thanks again to Len Wexford. He sent us some YouTube videos, so I now know how that works. Sorry, my phone's buzzing there.
It's all right.
In Mancala, if you pick up on your turn, you pick up all the gems that are in, or all the stones that are in one pot. They call them in that game pots, and then you immediately move one at a time to the remaining things all around. So if you're in pot number 1 and you pick up 4 stones out of that, then you put 1 in pot 2, 1 in 3, 1 in 4, 1 in 5. Okay. So you don't move them all. You just have to, you keep going around the board until you run out of your hand, dropping 1 in each well. All right. So my next thought was that what if the card is telling you not how many of your cubes you can move, but it's telling you how many places out you can drop those cubes. So maybe I do need a 10 card that says number 10. So I could scoop up everything in one well and just go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, drop them all off. But at any point I could drop any number that I want off. So,
okay.
You know, so I could, as soon as I run out, I have to stop. But if I pick up, you know, 6 cubes out of the first well, I could drop 1 in the next well, 3 in the next well, and then 2 in the third well, and then I'm done.
Okay.
So there'd be a way to drop off some of my opponent's guys, and I can move ahead, or vice versa, you know? So that's another concept. I was also thinking that there might be some Uno that could be put into this as well with the cards, you know, with reversing the order of movement. Or you can only put a card down if it's the same color or the same icon as the one that was last played.
Right.
To
tighten it up a little bit. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. So those are some of the other ideas that are bouncing around in there. Kind of bottom line, though, I think a lot of this, to see how it would work, I'd have to just kind of draw out the board and just start pushing some cubes around and see how that moves.
Very much so.
You know, also there would need to be a big hat in the middle of the board that you would throw the cubes into,
right?
Because he's the Hat Man. He's consuming stuff.
That would be cool.
But the thing that's really bothering me about this is the player elimination. And I so like that changeover idea that I had in the Slender game. So is there some way that I could, after he consumes your soul, that the players can still be involved in the game and be screwing the other guys?
What if you had black cubes come out and they were just shadow people?
I would really like to do that. I couldn't figure out how to make that work.
You could use them to block pathways. Like, you know.
So you can't go past a shadow person?
Right. Unless you have a certain card or something, or or you can do, you know, move so many things past them, then you can push them out of the way, you know. So
yeah, that's not bad. That's not bad.
I think that's the simplest thing would be to figure out a way to make them be shadow people. Mm-hmm. Fits in with the lore you're going with and everything.
So we each person, as soon as a shadow person comes out, one cube goes into play, and then they can play cards to move that cube around to get in the way of everyone else.
Yep.
So you can go up to a shadow person but never past the shadow person.
Or there's a way to get past them, but you make it hard. Like, maybe you have to move more cubes past the shadow person than there are shadow people in the thing.
Oh, okay. Right?
So, you know, you're kind of like a negative energy wall blocking. So.
Yeah. Okay, both warning and heralding.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, I like that. That could work.
I have to admit, though, from the moment you started talking about this, all that keeps going through my head is, na 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 Hat Man!
Sure.
So, yeah.
Sure.
I keep thinking that over and over again.
You know, that's kind of funny.
I think that could have some potential.
Maybe.
You could do a papercraft top hat in the center of the board.
That occurred to me. Yeah,
which you would love.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm always thinking about that. Always thinking.
I know.
Yeah,
like how can I make more papercraft stuff?
Yeah,
people liked it.
Yeah, people like that stuff. Yeah. Something cool sitting on the table. Who
make
cares?
Sure, if the hat has a buckle on it. Everybody knows the Hat Man was a pilgrim spirit.
He may have been. We don't know who he is. We don't know who he was.
Well, if he has a buckle on his hat, I guarantee he was a pilgrim.
Definitely a pilgrim. Yeah.
What the heck else would he have been?
Yeah. Right.
Hat Man. That's good, man. No, that's good. That's a worthwhile pitch.
Yeah. So it's a very simple, bare bones structure, but it's got some potential. I might play with that after Unpub a little bit. We'll see. It's going to be a long, cold winter. I'll probably have a Saturday afternoon with nothing to do sometime soon. I can draw out some circles and push some cubes around and see what happens. Of course, my biggest fear also with that structure is that he might be consuming a lot of stuff at first, but once everybody gets down to, you know, two or three cubes left on the board, it might be really easy to keep away from the Hat Man.
The shadow people would make that harder, though.
But that would require at least one person to die first.
True.
You know? So I want to make it... That would need to be a bigger obstacle, or so that's the thing where it might make it better if you could play a card to move the Hat Man instead of your cubes to try and catch somebody else.
That's a good point. Yeah.
So additional card types could help with that as well.
You could even have it be risky. Like when you move the Hat Man, it's a risk reward thing. Like there's a chance he might turn on you because you're moving him. Mm-hmm. So you're drawing his attention to make him do something.
Yeah.
So there's a chance that could backfire and he could come for you instead. That'd be kind of cool.
Yeah.
And maybe the more of your dice that you still, I mean, the cubes you still have out, the safer it is to move him. But the less you have, the more dangerous it becomes because you're less powerful.
Yeah.
So we have a few questions. We have voicemails we'll get to in a couple episodes.
But we
do have a couple questions.
Some Twitter questions. Moving on from the pitch.
First one. How do you go about naming a game? Does it affect how a publisher may view it, even if they would rename it?
Well, if you're Jason Slingerland, you just take two words that either start with the same letter or have the same sound within them, and then you mash it together, and then you design a game that fits that.
Alliteration's the way to go, dude.
Yeah.
But no, you're not wrong. That is my primary way.
Yeah.
Or you name it after something that sounds cool.
That's from Nick Shaw, by the way.
Yeah, same to Nick Shaw.
Yeah, I am terrible about thinking of, I'm terrible about coming up with good names.
It's true.
Yeah, it's one of my biggest problems in gaming development is coming up with a good name that is actually interesting. I think Rocket Wreckers is probably still the best game name I've ever come up with.
Right.
And that realistically could be better.
It's true. But it's a pretty good name.
Yeah, it's all right.
Lenier Wexford asked us, how have your gaming design tastes changed over the last few years?
Last 3 years.
3 years, sorry.
Yeah.
You know, that's a good question. I mean, I was into bigger games, designing and playing. Now I'm into a lot smaller, tighter experiences. So that for me is the biggest thing, I think.
That's a little tougher for me to say. I mean, I always liked small games. If anything, maybe I'm a little more confident in my opinions now about what I like, or I'm a little more sure about why I prefer smaller experiences, smaller games, tighter stuff.
Right. You're not very apologetic about two-player games anymore. You used to be like, well, you know,
yeah,
two-players. Now you're just like, I like two-player games. Suck it.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I guess that's about all I have to say. I don't know.
Lord Mupp wants to know, have you played Liar's Dice yet?
Nope, no. Still haven't. Haven't gotten around to that.
As that in 6 months. Answer probably still be no.
Yeah.
And then the next question, which we're not going to answer this week, but we're going to bring it up. Han Bo, our buddy Han Bo, said, walk through the process of how you two are preparing for Unpub. No, we're going to do that next week.
Next week, yeah.
yeah. We're going to have a special guest on who's going to talk with us, uh-huh. and it's going to be good times. Mm-hmm. We're not going to say who the special guest is, but you might be able to figure it out. It's somebody who's been on before,
mm-hmm.
been on a lot, talk about that person a lot. Could be anybody, really.
Kind of a jerk,
but yeah, on the show all the time. So,
yep. Last question is from Seth Goslin. He says, when you test a prototype with new players, do you always have written rules to refer to or just explain it? Written rules. Come on. Who writes rules?
Rarely do I have written rules.
Almost never. Almost never.
At Unpub, spoiler alert, I will have written rules for everything.
Yeah.
For two reasons. One, so I don't forget, and so that I can track changes very easy.
Mm-hmm.
And two, in case a publisher has to see them.
Yeah.
And because we found that, we didn't expect publishers to be like, let me see your rules. But yeah, that's like a thing. Like, publishers will say that to you. Let me see the rules for the game.
I'm not looking forward to that at all.
No, it's the worst. So, Ramblers, I have written rules for, obviously. Yeah. But the other games... No.
Writing rules is the worst. Yeah. I hate writing rules.
I'm
going to
make Andy write the rules for the one game.
Yeah, good.
In Outcome the Wolves, they have semi-written rules, like basically just notes for me so I remember how to play the game.
Yeah.
But it's totally changed, so the notes are pretty invalid. So.
Yeah.
So.
Yay! I have rules for Innkeepers.
Oh, yeah, because you had those last year from Gen Con.
Right, but I mean, the game has evolved 50% since then, you know, and I have some big changes. We can talk about that in a couple of weeks too.
Yeah.
But I have some big changes that I'm adding into that.
You tweeted a board for people.
I tweeted a basic concept for a board that I need to develop.
A tableau.
Yeah. But anyway, yeah, so no, rules hardly ever, barely ever. And if I did take the time to write the rules, chances are pretty good that I've made a change since then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's why, yeah, I don't like written rules that often. Written rules, I think, are the best when the game is published.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're not going to change them.
Right.
So, anyways.
Cool. That's good enough, eh? I think that's the end of our show. That's the end of our show tonight. So thanks, everybody, for listening to it. If you want to get in touch with us, send us an email to buildingthegamepodcast@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Twitter @podcastbtg. Jason is @JASlingerland, and I am @poorly_designed. Give us a call. Leave us a voicemail on our Google Voice number at 770-TEL-BTG. If you are overseas or don't want to mess with a telephone call, you can still record a voice message and email it to us. You can like us on Facebook and give us a 5-star review on iTunes, and you can buy our games. Go to our website, buildinggamepodcast.com. On there you can buy a copy of Water Balloon Washout. You can also find links to the games on the Game Crafter of mine, which are Epic Monster Tea Party, the Rumple Bum Academy for Bug Based Baking, and Finish It, the Outrageous Storytelling Party Game. If I forgot, don't forget Something from Nothing, bi-weekly video show with Jason and TC and Chevy, where they talk about stuff and games and junk.
Mostly just TC, though, talks a lot.
Right. Mostly TC just looks smart because he's a pretty smart guy, I gotta
admit. He pretends really well.
Yeah. Vote us up on Board Game Links.
Yeah,
Come on, help us
out.
That's it. That's enough. Good night.
Good night, builders. Good night.
Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios. All of the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are property of the Building the Game podcast. Next time on Building the Game.
I'm Jason Slingerland. Good night, Bill Bugay.